Kitty, Chapter 30. The flight of stairs kept to the contour of the pillar above, circling down clockwise into the ground. The passageway was tight, and the ceiling low. Even Kitty was forced to stoop, and Fred and Nick, who were practically bent double, had to descend sideways in the manner of two awkward crabs. The air was hot and faintly foul. Mr. Pennyfeather led the way, his lantern set to its strongest illumination. Everyone else did likewise, their spirits rising with a renewed light. Now that they were safely underground, there was no chance that anyone would see them. The dangerous part was over. Kitty followed the scuffling Nick, with Stanley treading close behind. Even with his lantern at her back, the shadows seemed intent on closing in. They darted and leaped incessantly at the corners of her vision. A goodly number of spiders had made their homes in crevices on either side of the stairs. From Mr. Pennyfeather's curses, it was evident that he was having to clear his path through 100 years of choking cobweb. The descent did not take long. Kitty counted 33 steps, and then she was stepping through a hinged metal grille and out into an open space, ill-defined by lantern light. She stepped aside to allow Stanley to exit from the stairwell too, then pulled her balaclava off. Mr. Pennyfeather had just done likewise. His face was faintly flushed, his ring of grey-white hair spiky and dishevelled.
"Welcome," he whispered in a high, hoarse voice, "to Gladstone's tomb."
Kitty's first sensation was of the sheer imagined weight of ground above her. The ceiling had been constructed from neatly carved stone blocks. With the passing years, the alignment of these stones had shifted. Now they bulged ominously in the centre of the chamber, pressing down against the weak light as if they wished to snuff it out. The air was full of taint, and smoke twirled from the lanterns and wreathed thickly against the ceiling. Kitty found herself clutching instinctively at each breath. The crypt itself was fairly narrow, perhaps only 4 meters wide at its broadest point. Its length was indeterminate, extending away into the shadow beyond the radiance of their lights. Its floor was flagged and bare, except for a thick carpeting of white mould that in places had extended halfway up the walls. The industrious spiders of the stairwell seemed not to have ventured through the grille. There were no cobwebs to be seen. Cut into the side wall of the chamber, directly opposite the entrance, was a long shelf, bare except for 3 glass hemispheres. Although the glass was dirty and cracked, Kitty could just make out the remnants of a circlet of dried flowers inside each one. Ancient lilies, poppies, and sticks of rosemary, dotted with brackish lichen. The burial flowers of the great magician. Kitty shuddered and turned to the main focus of the company's attention, the marble sarcophagus directly below the shelf. It was 3 meters long and more than a meter high, plainly carved without ornament or inscription of any kind, except for a bronze plaque that had been affixed to the center of one side. Its lid, also of marble, sat on top, though Kitty thought it looked slightly askew, as if it had been dropped into place hurriedly and left unadjusted. Mr. Pennyfeather and the others were crowding round the sarcophagus in great excitement.
"It's in the Egyptian style," Anne was saying. "Typical grandiosity, wanting to follow the pharaohs. No hieroglyphs, though. What's this say?"
Stanley was peering at the plaque.
"Can't make it out."
Mr. Pennyfeather was squinting, too.
"It's in some devilish tongue. Hopkins might have read it, but it's no good to us. Now..."
He straightened and tapped his stick against the sarcophagus lid.
"How can we get this thing open?"
Kitty's brow furrowed with distaste and something approaching apprehension.
"Do we need to? What makes you think the stuff's in there?"
Mr. Pennyfeather's nervousness revealed itself in his brittle irritation.
"Well, it's hardly going to be lying about on the floor, is it, girl? The old ghoul will have wanted it close by him, even in death. The rest of the room's empty."
Kitty held her ground.
"Have you checked?"
"Ah, a waste of time. Anne, take a lantern and check the far end. Make sure there aren't any alcoves in the far side. Frederick, Nicholas, Stanley, we'll need all our strength to shift this. Can you get purchase on it your side? We may need the rope."
As the men gathered round, Kitty stood back to watch Anne's progress. It immediately became obvious that Mr. Pennyfeather was correct. After a few steps, Anne's lantern illuminated the far wall of the chamber, a smooth surface of clear stone blocks. She swept the light across it a few times, checking for niches or the outline of doors, but there was nothing to be seen. Shrugging at Kitty, she returned to the centre of the room. Stanley had produced his rope and was assessing one end of the lid.
"It's going to be hard to loop it," he said, scratching the back of his head. "Can't wind it round anything, and it's too heavy to lift."
"We might lug it sideways," Fred said. "I'm game."
"Nah, it's too heavy. Solid stone."
"There may not be much friction," Nick pointed out. "The marble's smooth enough."
Mr. Pennyfeather wiped the sweat from his brow.
"Well, boys, we'll have to try. The only alternative is igniting a sphere on it, and that might damage the goods. If you, Fred, set your boots against the wall, we'll get extra leverage. Now, Nick."
While the discussion proceeded, Kitty bent down to inspect the bronze plaque. It was thickly covered in neat little wedge-shaped marks, arranged together to form what were evidently words or symbols. Not for the first time, Kitty regretted her own ignorance. Knowledge of obscure scripts was not something you were taught at school, and Mr. Pennyfeather had refused to allow his company to study the spell books they had stolen. She wondered idly whether Jacob's father would have been able to read this script, and what it would have told him.
"Kitty, shift out of the way, will you? There's a good girl!"
Stanley had taken hold of one corner of the lid, Nick was on another, and Fred, who had an end all to himself, had braced a foot against the wall just beneath the shelf. They were readying themselves for the first effort. Biting her lip against Stanley's facetiousness, Kitty got to her feet and moved away, wiping her face against her sleeve. Sweat was beading her skin. The air in the crypt was very close.
"Now, boys, push!"
With snarls of effort the men set to. Anne and Mr. Pennyfeather held lanterns up around the three to illuminate their progress. Light glistened on contorted faces, grinning teeth, dripping brows. Just for a moment a faint grinding noise could be heard above their groaning.
"All right, rest!"
Nick, Fred and Stanley collapsed with gasping cries. Mr. Pennyfeather hobbled round, clapping them soundly on the shoulders.
"It moved! Definite movement! Well done, my lads! No sign of the interior yet, but we'll get there. Take a breather, then we'll try again."
And so they did. And yet again. Each time their gasps grew louder, their muscles cracking with the effort. Each time the lid moved sideways a little more, then stubbornly stopped again. Mr. Pennyfeather urged them on, dancing about them like a demon, his limp almost forgotten, his face contorted in the bouncing light.
"Push! That's it! Our fortune is inches below your noses! If you just'll put in the effort! Oh, push, damn you, Stanley! A little further! Break your backs for it, boys!"
Picking up a discarded lantern, Kitty idled about the empty crypt, scuffing her plimsolls in the thick white mould, marking time. She dawdled to the far end of the chamber, almost to the wall, then turned and dawdled back. Something occurred to her, a half-perceived oddity waving vaguely at the back of her mind. For a moment she couldn't pin down what it was, and the cheer that came from the others after a particularly successful heave provided further distraction. She spun on her heels, looking back towards the far wall, and raised her lantern. A wall, no more, no less. Then what was it that... the mould, the lack of it? All around her, underfoot, the white mould stretched. Scarcely a single flagstone remained free, and on both sides the walls had been subjected likewise. The mould was gradually extending up towards the ceiling. One day, perhaps, the whole room would be swathed in it. Yet on the far wall there was not a single scrap of mould. The blocks were clean, their outlines as sharp as if the builders had departed that very afternoon. Kitty turned to the others.
"Hey!"
"That's it! One more turn'll do it, lads!"
Mr. Pennyfeather was practically capering.
"I can see a space now in the corner. Another heave, and we'll be the first to see old Gladstone since they tucked his bones away."
No one heard Kitty. No one paid her the slightest bit of attention. She turned back to the far wall. No mould at all. It didn't make sense. Perhaps these clean blocks were made of a different kind of stone. Kitty stepped across to touch the blocks. As she did so, her shoe caught on the uneven floor, and she fell forwards. She raised her hands to brace herself against the wall, and fell right through it. An instant later, she crashed hard against the flagstones of the floor, jarring her wrists and knee. The lantern bounced from her outstretched hand and clattered down beside her. Kitty screwed up her eyes in pain. Her knee was throbbing badly, and all her fingers tingled with the shock of the fall. But her strongest sensation was one of puzzlement. How had it happened? She was sure she'd fallen against the wall, yet she seemed to have passed through it, as if it wasn't there. Behind her came a fearsome grinding, followed by a terrific crash, several whoops of triumph, and also, somewhere amid it all, a cry of pain. She heard Mr. Pennyfeather's voice.
"Well done, my boys, well done! Stop snivelling, Stanley, you're not badly hurt. Gather round, let's take a look at him."
They'd done it. This she had to see. Stiffly, painfully, Kitty raised herself on hands and knees and reached out for the lantern. She got to her feet, and as she did so, the lantern light illuminated a little of the space she was in. Despite herself, despite the time she had spent out on campaign, despite all the narrow escapes, the traps, the demons, and the deaths of her friends, the shock of what she now saw set her gasping and trembling again, like the child on the iron bridge so many years before. Her pulse thudded in her ears. Her head swam. She heard a long, high, piercing wail echoing across the chamber, and jumped before realizing that it came from her own mouth. Behind her, the eager celebrations went suddenly silent. Anne's voice.
"What was that? Where's Kitty?"
Kitty was still staring straight ahead.
"I'm here,"
she whispered.
"Kitty!
Where are you?"
"Drat the girl. Has she gone up the stairs? Nicholas, go and look."
"Kitty!"
"I'm right here, at the far end. Can't you see?"
She could not raise her voice. Her throat felt too tight.
"I'm here, and I'm not alone."
The true end of the chamber was not much further than the illusory one through which she had fallen, perhaps only 3 meters away from where she stood. The white mould had disregarded the false barrier and marched straight through. It clad the walls and floor, and what lay on the floor, and shone with a sickly radiance in the cold light of her lantern. But despite its thick coating, it did not obscure the objects that lay arranged in a neat row between the walls. Their nature was all too clear. There were 6 of them, lying packed together, side by side, their heads flung out towards Kitty, their mouldering shoes pointing away towards the back wall of the chamber, their bony hands resting quietly on their chests. The sealed conditions of the crypt had ensured that their flesh had not entirely rotted through. Instead, it had shrunk about the skeletons, so that the jaws of the skulls were drawn downwards by the tightening skin, giving them permanent expressions of unbridled terror. The skin itself was blackened like fossil wood or tortured leather. The eyes had entirely shriveled away. All 6 were clothed, strangely, in old-fashioned suits. Heavy boots rested on their lolling feet. The ribcage of one poked through his shirt. Their hair remained exactly as it had been in life. It flowed from the dreadful heads like river weed. Kitty noticed that one of the men still had a mop of beautiful auburn curls. Her companions were still calling out her name. Their stupidity amazed her.
"I'm here!"
With a sudden effort, she broke through the inertia of her shock, turning and shouting back along the chamber. Nick and Anne were both close by. At the sound of her voice, their heads darted round, but their eyes remained blank and puzzled, passing over Kitty as if she were not there. Kitty groaned in exasperation and stepped towards them. As she did so, a strange fizzling sensation passed across her body. Nick cried out. Anne dropped her lantern.
"You'd better come and see this,"
Kitty said tersely. Then, when they did not reply,
"What the devil's wrong with you?"
Her anger snapped Nick out of his shock.
"Look at you," he stammered. "You're half in, half out of the wall."
Kitty looked down. Sure enough, from this side the illusion held quite fast. Her stomach, chest, and front foot protruded from the stones, as if they sliced right through her. Her body tingled at the margins where the magic touched.
"Doesn't even glimmer," Anne whispered. "I've never seen an illusion so strong."
"You can walk through," Kitty said dully. "There's things behind it."
"Treasure?" Nick was eagerness itself.
"No."
In moments, the rest of the company had approached the wall, and after some slight hesitation, stepped through the illusion one by one. The stones did not so much as ripple. From the other side, the barrier was quite invisible. All six stared in shocked silence at the illuminated corpses.
"I vote we get out now," Kitty said.
"Look at the hair," Stanley whispered. "And their nails. Look how long they are."
"Laid out like sardines on a plate."
"How do you think?"
"Suffocated, maybe. See his chest? That hole? That didn't come natural."
"We don't need to worry. They're very old."
Mr. Pennyfeather spoke with hearty assurance, designed, perhaps, to comfort himself as much as the others.
"Look at the colour of the skin. They're practically mummified."
"Gladstone's time, you think?"
Nick asked.
"Undoubtedly. The style of clothes proves it. Late 19th century. But six of them.
One for each of us."
"Shut up, Fred."
"But why would they be—"
"Some kind of sacrifice, perhaps."
"Mr. Pennyfeather, listen, we really—"
"No, but why conceal them? It makes no sense."
"Grave robbers, then? Punished by entombment?"
"We really need to go."
"That's more likely. But again, why hide them?"
"And who did it? And what about the pestilence? That's what I don't understand. If they triggered it—"
"Mr. Pennyfeather!"
Kitty stamped her foot and shouted. The noise reverberated across the chamber. The discussion stopped abruptly. She forced the words out through a tightened throat.
"There's something here that we don't know about. Some kind of trap. We should forget the treasure and leave now."
"But these bones are old," Stanley said,
adopting Mr. Pennyfeather's decisive manner.
"Calm down, girl.
Don't patronize me, you little twerp."
"I agree with Kitty," Anne said.
"But my dears—"
Mr. Pennyfeather placed a hand upon Kitty's shoulder and rubbed it with false good humour.
"This is very unpleasant, I agree. But we mustn't get it out of proportion. However these poor fellows died, they were placed here a very long time ago, probably while the tomb was still open. That would be why the illusory wall that hides them has got no mould, see? It's all grown up since then. The walls were clean and new when they met their end."
He gesticulated at the corpses with his stick.
"Think about it. These boys were lying here before the tomb was sealed. Otherwise the pestilence would have been triggered when they broke in. And it wasn't, because we've just seen it and dispersed it."
His words had a muted effect upon the group. There was some nodding and mumbling of agreement. But Kitty shook her head.
"We've got six dead men calling out to us," she said. "We'd be fools to ignore them."
"Huh. They're old."
From the relief in Fred's voice, it seemed the implications of this concept had only just dribbled through to him.
"Old bones."
He stretched out a boot and nudged the nearest skull derisively. It rolled to the side, away from the neck, and rocked briefly on the flagstones with a gentle sound like rattling crockery.
"You must learn, Kitty dear, to be less emotional,"
Mr. Pennyfeather said, removing a handkerchief from his pocket and wiping his brow.
"We have already opened the old devil's sarcophagus, and the earth's not swallowed us up, has it? Come and look, girl. You haven't seen it yet. A silken winding sheet laid out prettily on top. It alone must be worth a fortune. 5 minutes, Kitty. 5 minutes is all we'll need to lift that sheet and whisk the purse and crystal ball away. We won't disturb Gladstone's sleep for long."
Kitty said nothing. She turned and stalked, white-faced, through the barrier and back along the chamber. She could not trust herself to speak. Her anger was directed as much at herself, for her own weakness and unreasoning fear, as at her leader. His words seemed facile to her, too glib and easy. But she was not used to directly opposing his will, and she knew the mood of the group was with him. The tap-tap-tapping of Mr. Pennyfeather's stick came close behind her. He was slightly out of breath.
"I hope, Kitty dear, that you—" you would do me the honour of taking the crystal ball itself in your bag. I trust you, you see. I trust you implicitly. We shall all be strong for 5 minutes more, then leave this cursed place for ever. Gather round and get your knapsacks ready. Our fortune awaits us."
The lid of the sarcophagus remained where it had fallen, at an angle between the tomb and the floor. The section of one corner had snapped off on impact, and lay a little apart amid the mould. A lantern sat on the floor, burning merrily, but no light was cast up into the gaping black interior of the tomb. Mr. Pennifeather took up position at one end of the sarcophagus, leaned his stick up against the stone, and grasped the marble for support. He smiled round at the company and flexed his fingers.
"Frederick, Nicholas, hold your lanterns up and over. I'd like to see exactly what I'm touching."
Stanley giggled nervously. Kitty glanced back up the chamber. Through the dark she could just glimpse the impassive outline of the fake wall, its dreadful secret hidden behind. She took a deep breath. Why? It made no sense. She turned back to the sarcophagus. Mr. Pennifeather leaned in, took tentative hold of something, and pulled.